Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Before we begin today's episode of I Was There Too, I'd like to start like I often do, praising the products of Mack Weldon. They've got smart design, premium fabrics, and a simple shopping experience. Mack Weldon underwear is definitely better than whatever you're currently wearing. Having worked with them for years now, I can personally guarantee they're a wonderful company. They've got great products, all kinds too, with all kinds of new products coming out soon, bags and wallets, things you couldn't even imagine wearing as underwear. All that, and it's shipped right to your front door. If you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep it, and they will still refund you, no questions asked. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your purchase using the promo code WASTHERE.
Napalm smells best in the evening. It's not worth believing what you heard. Soylent Green, really, just a trisket, not a people biscuit.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to another exciting episode of I Was There Too. I'm Matt Gourley. This is the show where I talk to people present in all the classic scenes of cinema and television, which is what we're talking about today. And today, yet another first, and an embarrassing first at that. My guest is Eric Edelstein from Twin Peaks. He was also in Jurassic World, Drunk History, a movie I loved called Green Room. But with the return of Twin Peaks as a TV show, there was no better time to bring him in the studio and talk to him. The only problem? I've never seen Twin Peaks. Hold on. Everyone's got embarrassing gaps in their cinema and television watching history. I've always wanted to, and because of this interview, I'm probably going to. It's just one of those things that I got so far behind, I felt, when will I ever catch up? I'm certainly aware of its cultural significance and all the conversations I've heard about it, so I know plenty about it, but not enough to conduct a full interview, because as you know, listeners, I like to do my research and really get in there. So that's why Eric and I brought along our mutual friend Steve Berg, who's pretty much a Twin Peaks expert, and though I chimed in plenty of questions, he was the one that knew what to really ask. These are two of the most lovely guys who I am happy to call friends, and it was a great discussion in the studio. I hope you enjoy. You can find out more about I Was There Too online at I Was There Too on Twitter, also at Matt Gourley on Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd. If you don't mind, leave a nice 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It couldn't hurt.
The film, Twin Peaks, Jurassic World, Drunk History, and more, but mostly Twin Peaks. The year, 2017, but also originally 1990 and 1991. The role, Detective Smiley Fusco. The actor, Eric Edelstein, with guest co-host Steve Berg.
Let me check. Oh, man, that sounds velvety smooth. The fog's rolling in out of the Cypress Glen, right into the ears of our listeners. You're listening to Late Night Podcasting here, and I Was There Too. I am in studio with two gentlemen whom I don't know if we're dear friends, but I wish we were. We're definitely friends, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
It's someone I want to see more of. It always makes me happy to see you.
Yeah. I agree.
Where do you live? I'll move close.
Come on down. You can move in.
Yeah, I love you. Okay. We're going through a rough patch right now, so we're perfect.
I am here with Steve Berg and Eric Edelstein. And for a first on this show, I'm going to talk to someone who is in an important work of drama or television and sort of work through someone who knows better this show than I do. Because as I probably explained in the intro, I've never seen an episode of Twin Peaks, and I'm embarrassed to say that. But I feel like it's one of those things where I'm waiting one day when I have a really bad flu or cold where I can just binge them all. I look forward to it, and I think this episode will probably push me into that. Not into the flu, but into watching it. So, Steve, you're a huge fan of this show. You go way back.
Yeah, to me, it's more important than any TV show or movie I've ever seen.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. So you're the perfect person to do this. Yeah. And, Eric, you were in the latest season, Twin Peaks Returns, and you played the detective, Smiley Fusco, right?
I did.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes. And like Steve, I'm also a giant fan. I watched every episode, starting with one, on the couch with my mother in Vancouver, Washington.
Well, then I may start with the first question and then totally throw it to you.
Oh, yeah.
Then how was that, getting a role in this? If you were that much of a fan, that would feel like if I were to land in a James Bond movie or something somehow.
Yeah. The whole thing felt like a dream.
How
every
did it
second
happen?
Of it. Well, I got a call to audition, and it was like deep, deep in the valley where there are no real auditions ever. And
or special kinds of auditions.
Oh, yeah, special kinds. Yeah, I did that briefly when I was struggling. In 23, 24, I hit a rough patch. And there's bear work out there. I'll put it that way. You go out to this area, nobody's out there, and there's no script. And, you know, Steve, we usually get stuff to work on. And then you walk into this room, and the waiting room looks like how you'd imagine a David Lynch waiting room would be.
What, like wood paneled?
It's the people in there look like they walked out of a David Lynch movie, and they all look infinitely cooler, and they're, like, stylized. And I look like a grip that's coming in looking for glue or something. And then
for glue.
Grips use glue, right? I'm sure they do.
I was just going to put up some lights. You got any Elmer's wood glue?
Well, every gig I do, they're always – I drive up like, no, this is actor parking over there. They always assume I'm a grip or transpo or something like that. Like, no, you can't park. This is actor parking. It's a funny life of a character actor. So I kind of was just waiting in this waiting room. And then you walk in and the camera's on the second you walk in.
Oh.
Which is weird. And then they just start interviewing you. And I kind of could hear through the door of people before me. I will cop to that. They'll absolutely listen to other people through the door. People pretend not to, but I do. And then I could just tell they were like telling stories. And I was like, wow, I guess it's just talking. So we went in there. And then I remember immediately she was like, because I heard the guy before me said he didn't quite know what he was there for. Where I'm like, we know what we're there for. Uh-huh. So she was like, do you know why you're here? And I'm like, yeah, to audition for Twin Peaks. Trying to play it real casual. And like just said it like that. And then I went through all that and then didn't know how it went. And then I was freaking out. So I asked for feedback and like, yeah, they like you. They'll keep you in the loop. And then they called a couple months later. This was like, September, asking
Wait,
for my.
Can I ask, please. Were you auditioning sides or just telling a story to the casting?
You just tell a story. So she'd be like, do you know why you're here? So I told her like I was on Twin Peaks. And then I remember she got into, I just started rambling, as you well know I do. And I got it and multiple times thinking, why are you telling this in this Twin Peaks audition? This is so bad. And like I would leave my body because like I always never like it when people get actory or talk about that kind of stuff. Or I'm like, it's fairly straightforward, I think. But here I was like saying how I was really, it was weird because I was playing all these bad guys. I was explaining, I was in this movie called Green Room and I play a skinhead and now I'm getting offers to play killers and it's a little weird. I'm very happy for the work though and I used to be a bouncer so I'm happy for the work. But I was basically saying I was kind of freaked out playing all these bad guys. And then I swear, so I got put on hold twice, didn't get the jobs. Where they call him like, oh, so is Eric not shooting this week? And like, no, that part went to someone else. Oh. And then I think.
So wait, real quick, you were basically put in a pool of, we want this guy. It's just a question of where will we fit him in? It wasn't
like
from
the
beginning.
It'll match up.
Do you know what those other roles were?
I don't know, but I can guess. Okay. And I'm not sure if they were good guys or bad guys, but you see other parts in there where you see like a big tow truck driver or there's like a jerk sheriff's department that would normally maybe be in my wheelhouse playing bad guys. And I don't quite know.
Chad.
You
would have, I thought about you playing Chad.
Yeah, yeah. And that guy's a great guy. And he's so good awesome at playing a jerk, yeah.
But Smiley recurred throughout the episodes,
yeah.
Right?
And you had no clue. And then when they finally, I think I get treated by kid gloves sometimes where they're worried about my feelings. So they actually called and they said, okay, you've had Eric on hold for two parts on Twin Peaks. And it's his favorite show. do you think it's going to happen now? Because I think they were worried. Because, like, you don't understand. This meant a whole lot to a chubby 12-year-old. Are they going to – I mean, one line. Yeah. Please, please. And so they were like, they're like, David is trying to find something for you. And so I was like, oh, my God. Okay, that's a victory in and of itself. God. I don't know if I believe it. And then I finally got the call in February after being on hold since October. And it was pretty agonizing because it's my favorite thing. And then when I finally got the call and they said it's for sure happening, it was a Sunday night. It's working on a Tuesday. And I can't believe it. And you gather yourself. And then you go somewhere deep in the valley again for a fitting. And you have to sign a confidentiality thing before you walk in. And then they don't give you lines. They don't give you sides. So then they get a packet, and they're supposed to be my lines. And I'm like, okay, finally, I can work on this. And then I don't have any lines in there. And then there's a letter on top that said, you are playing Detective Smiley, and there are no lines in here, but rest assured, David's writing a part specifically for you and will give you stuff to do on the day. So I'm like, oh, that's too – and obviously wow. I saved that sheet of paper. And then they told you to shred the sides, and I may or may not have. Right. Souvenirs.
You may be wearing them as a T-shirt.
No, right now. You don't see them, but they're for sale after the show.
Wait, where in your house are they?
They're in my closet underneath my Air Jordans.
Just curious, yeah.
He's got carte blanche. My wife will let him in, too. This is trouble. And so then when I finally show up, I'm with two other detectives, Dave Koechner and Larry Clark.
Oh, boy.
And we're just kind of there hanging out waiting. And I've idolized Dave Koechner since he was on SNL and kind of can't believe I'm there. And we're like, wow, we're playing detectives together. And they all have lines, and the scene's only written for two detectives, not me. And then we show up, and Lynch is there. And I'd met him once or twice before through weird TM things.
Was he smoking
one
cigarettes?
Time with Steve. He did not have a cigarette in his hand at that time.
By TM, you mean transcendental meditation.
Yeah. I do the transcendental meditation.
We both met him there.
Yes, and we both turned into giant, just blubbering children.
So much sweat.
So much sweat, so awkward.
Did he know that you did TM?
Well, this is a funny digression, but worth it.
Okay, we will go back to this thread.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And I'm saying this part now only because I know Michael Cera did another interview and put this out, so I'm not betraying a confidence or anything else. I did the TM training program. I'm buddies with Michael, and we're always talking about stuff like this. He's like, do you want to go through the program with me? And then my other buddy, Simon Helberg, and his wife did this as well. So it's the four of us. You go through the program, and they pitch you on it, and it sounds great, and they show you the stats, and then at the end, it's $1,300. There's four of us there, three of whom have money.
Yeah.
I don't. I know I've got like $900 in there, but I'm trying to just play it casual. I'm like, sure, God, yeah, let's do it. Michael and Simon are like, should we do this? Yeah. I'm like, God, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll just do a little less stuff at the Equestrian Center. Done.
Yeah, yeah, I'll get yours. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
So like I go and I do it, and I'm like, and then a magical job happened, a movie I ended up being cut out of. Captain America, I was there too.
What?
Cut out. The guy was a dick at Craft Services.
Which Captain America?
The first Chris Evans one. I was
the very first one.
The very first one at the very end when he learns out, when he's finally coming to, you can kind of tell it's me. They just needed two foreboding people to like walk in.
I'll be damned.
And then I I got cut out, but it was at the exact time, and that was like took care of the TM. And then I still get residuals for it because you still get them if you're cut out.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
So we go through this program. Steve's been through it, and I would definitely recommend it.
Okay.
Look into it. It's great. And then on the last day, Pookie Freeberg shows up, who's from the David Lynch Foundation. She said, hey, David.
Pookie Freeberg.
None of these names sound real, but they are.
Okay.
And it's like, hey, I heard that there are meditators that are actors, and I told David, and he'd like to invite you guys to come out to meditate at his house, which is unbelievable, and you can't believe it. And so we're like back and forth. I'm like, there's no way this is going to happen. And Michael and I are like little kids of like, there's no way this is going to happen. And then we get the call and you get the address and we drive out and you go to this concrete mansion and he's upstairs. And at this time he wasn't doing any film or TV. He was just into his art.
Uh-huh.
And he's up there painting, but he's outside with American Spirits. And he talked to him and I knew he was from, or he lived in Spokane as a kid. So I was like, oh, hey, David, I moved down here from Spokane. Oh, Spokane, sure. I remember those ponderosa pines and the Air Force planes just flying over. It's wonderful there, sure.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, my gosh. And then he just spent a little bit of time with each of us, and it was all just to be a benefactor. And, meditation's helped me a bunch. I really think it can help you guys. And, you know, you see the mortality rates for actors is going up, and it's you know, I think it's he's really trying to push this on people. They're also doing it for, you know, war veterans with PTSD, Native American reservations.
No, it's a great foundation.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. It's like getting this information to the people that need it most. So I was totally behind it. When you were there, you're like, oh, my God, he's just doing this just to be cool. And then I remember the coolest thing he said was when we were leaving, he's like, okay, and just remember, guys, no matter what it is, just kind of focus on the donut, not the hole. And it's the greatest, like, focus on the donut, not the hole. And there's so many times where you're like, wow. Yeah, something's pissing me off. I'm like, all right, let me focus on the donut here.
Just hearing that, I already went three levels deep on what that could possibly mean, mm-hmm. which makes a lot of sense from what I know of David Lynch himself.
Everything. Well, because I wanted to do meditation because Steve and I read his book, Catching the Big Fish. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what he talks about is as you go further that the big fish are down there. Uh-huh. So it might be a real big metaphysical donut that he's talking about. But
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, no.
I mean, it definitely
we'll know what that means at like age 66.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know,
yeah.
with a guru.
He knows all the secrets.
I think he does.
Oh, for sure he does.
I actually think he does. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean.
And then hilariously, so I was sure through this whole time that that was how I got the audition. And our buddy even teased me. He's like, look at you, turn a TM into work. Uh-huh. And I'm like, no, it's not like that. It's not. And then on the last day of work, his assistant showed up.
Pookie.
And he kept looking at me. This wasn't Pookie. Oh, Pookie works for the Lynch Foundation.
Okay.
And Pookie's also, interestingly, one of the first – she's the first generation of the people raised in Iowa doing meditation.
Fairfield, like, Iowa. Yeah, she is.
What, three or four they start them?
Yeah.
Yeah. And these when you meet these people, they have a calmness that you can't imagine.
It's like a high school of valedictorians. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all like geniuses.
It's really crazy.
Ben Foster was one of the first people, too.
Oh, that's right. And he's a meditator.
Yeah.
And then the last day, David's assistant showed up, and he kept looking at me. And I knew I recognized him. And he's like, didn't you come out to the house and meditate? And I was like, yeah, I think that's how all this. And he's like, I don't think David is aware of this. So I was like, ah. So he started – I see the assistant go over and talk to him, and then he just starts looking at me. He's like, that was you, wasn't it? Oh, my gosh. Are you still doing TM? I'm like, I am, sir. And so then the whole thing became a mystery because I was sure that was how I was there. Because I did TM, I went to his house and meditated. I'm like, I must have laughed at some point. But no, I think it was from the audition, and I'm guessing I giggled because basically what I would end up doing in the show, he would just pepper in my laugh.
Oh, wow.
Like with surgical precision, like he was playing an instrument.
Okay.
So it's almost like I was a guitar where you go, okay, so your brother's going to blurt out one line and then you're just going to laugh two or three laughs and suppress the third. So go, yep, got it. Okay.
Which makes sense because he does his own sound design, right, for the show.
Yeah.
So in many ways, this is just as much like a sonic journey as a visual one. Am I right about that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Take it over, Steve.
No, I mean, but you're right.
I mean
it. Sound engineering is so big for him. Tour, that's just as much part of it as the visual thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's...
Well, he does his own sound editing, right, Steve?
Sound engineering. He's in there taking, like, a piece of meat and throwing it against the wall. Like, literally.
What?
That's
So he's doing his own Foley and everything?
All of it.
This exhausts my knowledge of Twin Peaks now, so I do hand it over to you now.
Honestly, Eric, you answered five of my questions.
Did I?
Which is great. I mean, it was such a thorough thing. Let me get into maybe a deeper cut. Because I'm a huge Mark Frost fan, who is the co-creator of Twin Peaks.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the biggest questions I had, was he on set? Did you see him? And if he was – well, I'm sorry. Was he on set?
I did not see Mark Frost on set. But, I mean, I know that they're, you know, two-headed dog.
Right.
That they're working together. But it's mostly, I think, David directing there.
Yeah.
And kind of more hands-on.
Right.
And then they're writing it together.
Right. Yeah. So – because I know the way it worked in the first two seasons is, like, David would be on set directing and Mark Frost would be running the writer's room.
Oh, okay.
But they kept them really close. Oh, they would always like have a mobile writing room that was really close to the set, so David could pop over during lunch and say,
no,
"This is what we got with what we're thinking." So you did not see him. I was just curious.
No, because I think the writing was done.
It was already.
They had like
a movie,
500-page script. So like my pages were like page 200 to like 280 intermixed in there, and then so you would have no clue what was going on ever. Just your scenes. And then it wasn't until the first time I walked in with David Koechner and Larry Clark where I'm like, okay, we're just three detectives. And then you see him for the first time, and you know, you instantly get nervous, and he's so happy, and he's wearing all the same outfit he wore shooting the original Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And then he walks up to the three of us, and we don't know anything, and I'm not in the script. I'm like, dude, if I'm standing here, I'm good. I don't care. And it's that corny thing where I'm like, man, if it ends tomorrow, I'm in Twin Peaks. Once they get one thing cut and I'm not fired, whatever. And then he's like, okay, you guys are detectives, but more than that, you guys are the Fusco brothers. You're three Las Vegas detectives. And then he turns to me and he goes, and this is the baby. We love him. He's going to laugh. And then it's like you get your marching orders and you're going into battle and you know. And he just the whole time is just kind of creating everything on set as it happens.
And was there ever a sense of why he wanted this dynamic of three brothers and one who punctuates with laughter? Like, did you ever get the sense? Because I do know that this is commonly asked about David Lynch, but is there meaning behind it, or is it a kind of an expressionistic thing where he's like, it's not about what I'm trying to get to say. It's about what you feel when you see it. Was it? What was your sense of that? Or
that's
Steve,
a great question, man.
You might know.
I mean, Steve, I'd be curious.
I would say B, what you just said, more just like – I think because he will never answer a question about any of any piece of his art.
Right.
He's like, that defeats the whole purpose.
Right.
So I think it is just kind of a thing. It's like, this is in this world. Enjoy it. Make of it what you will. That's the fun part about a David Lynch film. It's like you are a co-creator in the story.
Right.
He never ends it with a clear linear – it's not, you know, you can't save the cat of David Lynch movie, you know? Like it's not the typical screenplay or film. So I think what you said, like having Eric laugh, people might have been looking for a reason why. Like, ooh, what does that mean? Is he a dark Black Lodge entity or something? But like no, I think it's just part of the flavor of a David Lynch – world making. You know?
I remember learning that about his work, and that was the first time that I was ever able to enjoy like Eraserhead, because I had seen it prior to understanding that approach to art. And so the first time I saw it, I had a reaction that a lot of people did, that it was pretentious and, you know, like kind of abstract for its own sake. But then looking at how Eraserhead himself feels about meeting this woman, and when they're in her living room and there's the girl in the radiator and the uncle going, you're looking at my knees, and you're just – you're meant to feel uncomfortable like he is. And then that's watching that in a whole new world that I can't wait to actually turn on Twin Peaks and kind of let go of the logic and try to take in, I guess, what it's trying to tend me to feel.
Yeah. And the wonderful thing about Twin Peaks too, it was like he had been kind of – after Eraserhead, he had started – like he did Blue Velvet, which kind of like reinvigorated his career, because he was in director jail after Dune.
Yeah.
He was like, was never going to get a penny to make another movie. So we got some movie to do Eraserhead, but it started this theme, which he carried over into Twin Peaks, which is wonderful. It's about total, Rockwell picture of Americana, but underneath is a layer of dark secrets.
Yeah.
So everyone, even though, hey, the mailman, he seems so nice, the milkman, they have dark underlying secrets. And Twin Peaks just was the, I think, the culmination of him wanting to do this American, like, tale.
The nightmare under the American dream.
The nightmare under the, So, I mean, God, it was just, you know, wow, Eric. You got me. It's so crazy.
Well, for me, it was also weirdly specific to the Northwest.
Oh,
because we
are
weirdos up there. And to be 12, and you figured out, and I also grew up. It's all developed now with 20 miles of woods from my backyard.
Wow.
Where you just didn't want to go in there at night.
Yeah.
Little kids want to go to the place. You just knew not to go. And he nailed that mystery. And I also think for me, and Steve, I'd be real curious about you. I realize now when Twin Peaks came on in my living room for the first time, that was my first ever exposure to the art house. That was the first time I think film or cinema that I'd ever seen it. And then my parents were awesome, because then after that, it was like they were taking me to Goodfellas.
Yeah.
And I had an 8-year-old sister, and people were like, what are you doing? They're like, oh, she's seen Twin Peaks. Where
it's I agree with you. I think for a lot of people in our generation, Twin Peaks was the gateway drug to like Stanley Kubrick and maybe, you know, Jodorowsky and some of the – like I remember after I saw Twin Peaks, I started watching like Taxi Driver. And I was really young. Like – so when I was 13, I think 12 or 13 – I was watching like these movies that were like adult movies, but I don't think I would have ever gotten into film or even like become an actor had I not seen Twin Peaks, because it was such a shock to my system. It was insane to watch as a kid.
That's why, like, moving down here and being friends with you, where I felt it with you and a couple other friends out here, where we all have that Twin Peaks Lynch thing.
Yeah.
And I think it was this profound influence as a kid.
Yeah.
Where you're seeing something like that into another world. You're seeing David Lynch as a 12-year-old? That's, I think, yeah, very good for a growing young boy.
I do, too. Yeah. It makes you question a lot of things.
And yeah.
You know, gets you into a different kind of art, which is, yeah, nice. You know, Billy Madison is fun, but, you know.
I watched it every day.
It was a
every
fun movie when summer, you're a kid, but you know, yeah, getting into Lynch is pretty profound, man.
Good to have that diversity, I imagine.
Think so. Yeah. I think so.
He was going to direct Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on what that would have become?
I mean, I would have loved it. He chose Dune over it.
I know. I would kill to at least have that version as well, just as an experiment to see what that would have been.
And Cameron Crowe pitched him Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, my God.
Like, what? That story just came out. He legit earnestly pitched him, and he said Lynch was so nice. He's like, I don't really know if this is what I do. But I would have loved to have seen that version of it. My God.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Let's throw up good thoughts and intentions for Judge Reinhold right now, shall we? He deserves them. I think he's going through a rough patch.
Is he?
He is.
I think he got arrested in an airport recently.
It's a safe bet.
I mean, I was big as a kid for me. Judge Reinhold. Because I would always – I always knew even as a kid – not to emulate the leads. I knew it wasn't going there, but the character actors were the ones I was always the most interested in. Like, okay, that maybe. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, and Beverly Hills Cop, Billy Rosewood.
Oh.
God, he's the best in that.
He's so great. So good. Yeah. You know a movie I love? I was always a much bigger Vice Versa fan than Big.
I love Fred Savage.
With Fred
Savage. That's a big pool to pick from because there's also, well,
like
the
Father
original,
Like Son with Kurt Cameron.
Freaky
Dudley
Friday.
Moore one, right?
Yeah, with
Kurt
Fred
Cameron.
Isn't there one with Fred Savage,
That was
too?
Vice Versa.
Okay, God.
That was the trifecta. They all came out the same year, I think.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
But
I saw all of them and thought they were all great.
It's a fun genre.
It is a fun genre.
All right, I digressed us.
Yeah, sorry.
Take us back to Twin Peaks if you have
Well, Eric literally answered all my questions, so I'll just start – Mark Frost was never around. Like, he was at the premiere, though.
He was at the premiere, and then I'm dying to meet him because he lives out in Ojai, and he's definitely, like, Steve and I are very interested in, like, the Theosophical Society there.
Exactly.
That he's in. Steve's told me about this stuff, but it looks like this guy's living a pretty interesting life out
there. Oh, yeah.
I just get too nervous to introduce myself.
Well, it's Mark Frost. He's a genius.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get enough credit for Twin Peaks because all the mythos and all like the deep lore of it, that's really Mark Frost.
The Black Lodge, the White Lodge, you sent the stuff to me about it.
Yeah.
That these came out of Atlantis.
Yeah, it's old Himalayan lore.
Really? See, I feel like this is stuff I would like to know going in.
Yeah.
Is there a primer that I should check out or should I just go in blind as I can?
I would go in as blind as you can.
Okay.
But definitely start with the, you know, the TV movie pilot, whatever you want to call it. And then don't skip an episode. Really have to watch
it. I'm kind of a completist in that
way. Okay, good.
I
figured you would be.
I went and rewatched them all. And it's weird now because season 2 gets a horrible rap. But I remember as a kid being completely enthralled and entertained.
I love season 2.
Like, and all of it. And, like, I still think it's great.
It's incredible.
And I love – and Fire Walk With Me, I love.
I skipped football practice. I almost got kicked off the team going to see that in the theater.
Did you really?
Yeah.
This is why you should be here, Steve. Yeah. You're home
that
in Hollywood.
A wonderful sentence.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I almost got kicked off for joining the drama club and going to see Twin Peaks.
Really?
Yeah, and then I quit the next year because I was like, screw that, man.
I'm so glad you quit, buddy.
I had Morrissey hair, and then I'd taken my football helmet off. I had Morrissey hair. Like, I was a giant emo kid. Giant.
I skipped my 8th grade graduation dance because I finally was on the verge of figuring out how to make movie squibs like Blood Pact.
Are you serious?
I've done it.
I did it, and
see,
I did, yeah.
You guys are smart for skipping. Because I didn't ever skip. I just went full throttle. So I went to Ralph Miller basketball camp as a kid on the first day in front of 800 kids. I showed up with a Debbie Gibson Electric Youth concert t-shirt. And this was before the age of tolerance, friends. They called me Debbie for an entire week. And I had my mom pick me up. I told her, actually, like, pick me up 4 blocks away. That's where they're wanting us to do it. And then right as my mom pulls up, these kids come, bye, Debbie! And I'm like, what are they calling you? Oh, it's a joke. Oh, they're kids, you know, they're kids. Where's your Debbie Gibson shirt? Oh, it's Aunt Bonnie. It's Aunt Bonnie. So I'm good.
Why are you shirtless right now?
No, it's all good. Let's go home, huh?
Okay.
I need alone time.
All right. Well,
yeah, these are all root causes, Steve. We all have. Lord.
Let's go
when
watch
you're
more
a giant
Twin Peaks,
man, like
honey.
Steve and I, Lord, thrown into a slightly different society, we'll make do.
Yeah.
there's going to be some root causes that lead to comedy. You know what I mean?
Sure.
We're sensitive large men. We don't want to play football. My football career was one half.
Yeah.
And then I quit because the Ram head got hot.
Yeah.
The mascot.
No, yeah.
I mean, really hot in there, and I'm sure there was not up to OSHA standards.
I used to hit people and then ask them if they're okay and feel like I was going to start crying.
Every fight I ever had.
So I had to quit because I was too emotional to play football. I hated it. It was horrible.
This kid kept hitting me. And finally I hit him, and I was like hitting him. Like, why are you making me do this? Like crying. And he was 2 years older than me, and I was just this giant kid.
Oh, very strange, Steve.
Very strange.
Let me ask you. I just want to say
this is the deepest we've ever gone personally. Oh, good. I'm just loving it. No,
we were there too, damn it.
That's right.
Junior high was tough.
HelloFresh is on a mission to save home cooking. They want to make cooking more fun, so they focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. They like to think of themselves as a farm-to-box company because they want everyone to have access to fresh ingredients that inspire great meals. But they don't stop there. They're also a couch-to-kitchen company, because the best way to kick those 5 p.m. excuses is by feeling unstoppable in the kitchen. And then just when you think we're done with these, they're also a proud-to-be-a fork-to-feel-good company, because when you cook and eat delicious and healthy meals, you'll want to keep doing it again and again. HelloFresh currently offers customers a classic box, a veggie box, and a family box. Customers can order 3 to 5 different meals per week designed for 2 to 4 people. New recipes are created every week. The recipes will make you feel unstoppable, and your taste buds will thank you. In 6 easy-to-master steps, they get you chopping, zesting, and cooking like a natural. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking more fun so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. I've used them, my wife has used them, our cat has used them when we're done using them, and everybody's satisfied. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks short on time. They've got the freshest ingredients, they employ 2 full-time registered dietitians on staff who review each recipe to ensure it's nutritionally balanced, they deliver the food to your doorstep in a recyclable insulated box for free, and they're now offering light fall meals. And they've just introduced breakfast options. All for less than $10 a meal! Just go to HelloFresh.com and use promo code IWTT30. That's IWTT30. And you'll get $30 off your first week of deliveries. That's promo code IWTT30. Earwolf? More like Fear Wolf. Get ready to quake in your headphones because Earwolf podcasts are getting extra spooky this October. Listen to How Did This Get Made, The Canon, and Cracked Movie Club dissect spine-tingling horror classics all month long. And watch out for special spooktacular episodes of Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, The Cracked Podcast, and Who Charted? Or should I say, Boo Charted? You can also find classic episodes of I Was There Too on Stitcher Premium. PJ Souls from Halloween, Derek Mears from Friday the 13th, the demon-faced woman from The Exorcist, get it all! Follow along on social media with hashtag FearWolf so you don't miss any Halloween action.
My one question I definitely wanted to ask, if you don't mind, is...
Not at all.
So you had this wonderful scene in Dougie Jones's office, right? Now, what was it like? Because, I mean, like, we've both – I've met David Lynch. You've met David Lynch. He's obviously – I'm not even sure if he's a real person. But he's, you know, like, demigod level. But what was it like doing a scene with one of the most iconic characters for me ever to put on Moving Picture, Kyle MacLachlan, Special Agent Dale Cooper? What was that like, man?
Again, it's one of those where you think you're going to wake up or I'm going to be back at Starbucks in Highland and Franklin. It's a morning shift. Like, it doesn't feel real, or you feel like this is a dream, and we're creating all. I'm like, there's no way I'm really here. It's kind of the same way I felt when I did Curb Your Enthusiasm, because I love that show, and that was my goal moving down. Where I'm like, this isn't real. But then he's there, and he's just a fearless leader, and he's directing with love. And then Kyle MacLachlan is the nicest, kindest guy ever. Yeah. He's from Washington, and that whole thing, I sit there for a whole scene. And it's a long scene, too. And I don't do a thing. And then at the end, I just let out one insanely loud, and it breaks this scene, and it's insane. And then it's awesome. And then the other guy in that scene, I got to do 2 scenes with him, a national treasure, Don Murray, who plays Bushnell Mullins, who is out of retirement for like 20 years. His first movie was Bus Stop, and he's Oscar nominated with Marilyn Monroe. And he's just sitting with us at a table in between – telling us stories, And then, like, Tom Sizemore will poke his head in. And then David Lynch will walk through. My favorite David Lynch visual I'll ever have in my life. And David Koechner got somebody to take a picture of it. And I'm hoping it's out there. Was we look over at him one time, and he's sitting there on a stool, tiny, tiny stool, smoking a cigarette with his bullhorn and a giant fire extinguisher. And, like, without any – and I'm like, does he know that this is the most amazing thing any of us have seen?
He lynched himself.
Yeah. And yeah. Koechner went to the set photographer and was like, can you please go get a – he's smoking with a fire extinguisher. Get a picture. And, like, I think we got one. I don't know. And then he – I was, like, looking at him, and then he looked at me, and I was kind of caught. But it was just the coolest thing ever because he was totally present in there. And what the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life is he adds shots and creates them as they need it. So we have this one scene, the second one after that, Steve, mm-hmm. where we're getting deep in this mystery with Dougie Jones of, not to give spoilers, but why his car is blown up, why someone's trying to kill him. And then Lynch is like, okay. And then at the end, he wants us to always break these up with non sequiturs. Of to get away from it. And I don't know if it's to humanize cops or that we don't really care. I don't know. And to me, it was like we're kind of like these three stooges and just clowns. Like at the end, we could have cracked the whole case, but we laugh and don't do anything of it. There, in my mind, there's a commentary on enforcement, but that's my own probably
almost
filter.
Almost even Marx Brothers with you being nonverbal.
There was Harpo a think piece that compared us to the three stooges. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's all this weird stuff that influenced him.
He loves Jacques Tati, too.
So oh, yeah, that sense.
You guys were so Jacques Tati, like your characters, I thought. Like it's really, I mean, but it did feel very almost like vaudevillian, you know, like it was a routine with you guys.
Oh, it was so amazing. Funny. And then he would just say, break it up. And so we'd be in this intense scene, like, okay, now you're going to ask him about his new taillight. And really ask him about this taillight because it's $239. So we go through and we do the scene and he thinks about it and he's like, yeah, guy, now you got to really get into this taillight. This is... I mean, that's a $239 taillight. So we're like, okay, yeah. Fuck yeah, this is an important taillight. So then we did it and really got in and made the taillight. It's as important as it should be.
Does he mean get into it with the lines as written, or are you improvising?
Oh, no, there's no improvising.
I didn't think
so. As far as I knew, the only improvisation that happened the entire shoot was Jim Belushi, who is amazing in Twin Peaks. Amazing. And apparently he improvised, and David Lynch said, we're not going to have to send you to the principal's office, are we, Mr. Belushi?
Oh.
Because he's real upfront. And Jim Belushi knew, like, everything we do is completely choreographed.
Yeah.
In the best way.
Well, that makes
sense like
if
you're
so deliberate.
He's a painter, and you're a color. Or he's Neil Young, and I'm Neil Young's Gibson guitar. He's playing it through me, and it makes it easier. Because I'm not great at thinking. That's how I ended up in this job. And he takes away any amount of thinking. So he'll literally say, okay, blurt out two and three. That I can do. Don't think about anything that I can do. Okay, now you're just kind of talking to your mom right now and she's lost.
That's
and then from now on, the whole time, I'm thinking of that. So then we do the taillight scene. And then once we've sufficiently that it's a $239 taillight, he's like, wow, yeah. Guys, I think we got to see this taillight. And you just watch. I've never seen this in my life on a set. Everything is so choreographed, shot listed, everything. And everyone just, they've worked with them for 30 years. Everyone is a family there. They love him so much, and he loves them, and he treats them as co-creators. So everyone is slightly nervous because this is unprecedented, and then we have to go and shoot another thing with a big wardrobe change, the three Fusco brothers. It's very important we have a wardrobe change, but now he's decided this taillight is so important that my brother paid $239 for it. We got to see it, which obviously I agree with.
It's Chekhov's taillight.
It's so important.
It's got to turn on at some point.
Come on. So then he has us go outside in a parking lot and walk by a random truck and look by the taillight. So we just kind of walk by. And the whole time, you don't want to screw up. And then, but I realize you're probably underplaying. And he wants it to be totally real. And my brother and I are making fun. So we walk by the taillight and just kind of look at it and walk by, cut. Guys, that taillight may not even be right. That it may not even totally match. Let's really look at the taillight. So we walk by again and look at the taillight. Meanwhile, everyone's looking that we have to be in another location 15 minutes away and 20 minutes with a wardrobe change. And everyone's nervous and nobody thinks Lynch knows or cares about the wardrobe change. So we go through, really look at the taillight, like you see me really look and like Koechner kind of tap it. And then we walk by, he's like, okay, great. And then everyone's freaking out about the wardrobe change. He's like, okay, Fusco 1 through 3, each of you, take off your tie. Fusco 1, hand it to Fusco 2. Fusco 2, hand it to Fusco 3. God. Fusco 3, hand it to Fusco 1.
Oh.
We're all holding different colored ties. He goes, okay, our wardrobe change is done. We're going to move on.
Yes.
Dude, unbelievable.
That's
now,
incredible.
Never mind that David Koechner now has my big and tall tie. That can be fixed. And then the horrible thing was I learned freshman year I didn't know how to tie a tie. So at college I went through my roommates. I know how to tie a tie.
Uh-huh.
The first time in 15 years I have been able to tie a tie is in front of David Lynch.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I couldn't tie it, and I didn't tie it. He goes, oh, my God, you don't know how to tie a tie, do you? And I go, no, no, I know how, Dave. And then I'm like, oh, my God, I just called him Dave.
Dave.
Are you kidding? This is the guy three cubicles down. This is Dave. I'm like, I'm done. And then he just looked at me and laughed. Yeah, and like he's just creating, and what I love is so many people I see kind of embrace that you have to be tortured create.
Yeah.
And you have to be miserable.
Did you ever get a sense that anybody was at odds with his style working on the set? Because they're probably at this point, they know they're there to serve this master, for lack of a better term. But I want to ask you about Koechner because I've worked with him. We had some scenes in The Great Show, Another Period. And that guy, what you see – as far as my experience with him, what you see on camera is what you get with that man in real life. He is a powerhouse and a tornado.
Oh,
I'm just wondering
yes.
on this if he was something different. But, I mean, I couldn't believe how much energy and ideas that guy could bring to the table. He's a lovable, lovable man, and he's unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
What was he like on this?
He's amazing. He's the king. Like, and for me, I remember being a kid and watching him on Saturday Night Live, and he was my favorite on there. And I kind of told him, I was like, no, no. But I followed his whole career since, and I love him so much. And to watch him in Twin Peaks and just thrive, because it's still David Koechner, but it's a calm down one where, you know, the 88-year-old guy says to him, funny thing, they took his car and blew him up. Never know. He's like, probably money, Bushnell. That's all it ever is.
Yeah.
Where you're like, it's this completely contained David Koechner, but he's still the funniest man in the world.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then, like, he's everything you want him to be because off stage, he's the funniest guy ever. And to see that energy on a Lynch set, and Lynch got the biggest kick out of him.
Really? Because he is nonstop on.
No, he's nonstop on and he's doing jokes, but Lynch loved it. Like, he knew he got these three giant clowns, these big clowns, and he's just letting them go.
Yeah.
And then everything Lynch does is so with love that he wraps every single person. Everyone gathers around and he has his bullhorn. And every person that wraps, He's sad to see him go.
Oh.
And you don't ever see this. Like, sometimes they'll, like, oh, come here, all in out. You're like, man, I just want to go. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
But with him, he's created such a family on that set. And this is the only gig I've ever had where Drunk History and this one are the only ones where people meet intermittently in between to, like, keep that family connection. And you see there's people that have worked with him now from the beginning of the first Twin Peaks. There's almost 10 people. And it's because he everyone there feels like they're creating something. And he's never angry, and he's never – and, you know, he's telling you exactly what to do, which frees you to just be there.
Yeah.
To just be there.
That's wonderful. Well, speaking of Drunk History, we're going to talk about that in a minute. But before we get to that, I just want to cover Jurassic World very briefly because I also had Lauren Lapkus on the show.
I was there too.
And,
yeah, she's in the other room right now.
I know. What's it like to – the contrast – Twin Peaks, which is just, like you said, a family and something that is a pet project in many ways, to go from coming off something like, I don't know, you've done everything in the spectrum in between, because even Green Room is this wonderful indie comic, which, man, I loved that movie.
I was fired up when you told me you liked it. Like, okay, good. Gorley likes it. Good.
God, I love that movie.
Yeah.
And then Jurassic World, which is as big a blockbuster can be. What was your experience like on that?
Weirdly similar, because they all have incredibly creative directors, where the freedom I saw that Colin had on Jurassic World was shocking, that they backed off and let him create, and all the things that people comment on, that little scene I have before I get eaten, every cool thing I do is a Colin Trevorrow idea on set, where he'd be like, man, what if you took a sandwich just right after you realize the dinosaur is missing? And I'm like, yep, I'm a nervous eater. I could probably do that. And that's how it happened. And then he's like, we're sitting there, and he's like, what if right before the dinosaur comes down, you just start kissing your metal, like a last prayer? And I'm like, yep, that's really funny, Colin. Yeah. And to see somebody have that level of freedom on that big a set where they just let him do it, I think that's part of why it worked out. Because I'm like, this guy is making up stuff right now in a giant movie, and they're letting him do it.
What could have gone so wrong on the new Star Wars film?
I don't know, but I don't know, but all I'll say is based on working on one blockbuster with him, it was amazing to watch that level of creativity on set. And I've read, and there's a bunch of stuff out there, but for me, I just kept thinking of that.
Yeah.
And it'd be real easy to pile on, but man, I'd love to take credit for those things. They were all his ideas. And same with Jeremy Saulnier from Green Room, where
he's
I was nervous meeting him because I read the script, and I'm not. I play all these physical parts and bad guys. And Steve, it's kind of similar with you, where we're auditioning guys that played in Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Like Brad Hanke played in a Super Bowl for the Broncos, and like my wife fixes stuff around the house. Like. So I'm always kind of feeling like seriously, like I was the guy in gym class that couldn't do stuff. So it's like when I read that Green Room script, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe they think I can do this Nazi. But all this physical stuff and someone that writes a script like this is probably pretty dark and they're not going to have a ton of empathy that I have a bad knee, don't want to do this. He is the nicest, coolest, sweetest dude ever. Same as Lynch, same as Wes Craven, where these dark directors,
yeah,
it's almost
it.
Like it's their catharsis or something. Because Jeremy, after week one, he bent over backwards to make sure I was protected. Because it was all those English actors and their method.
Yeah.
And this
Well, that's the opposite of what you normally hear. Like the new class of English people are method, huh?
Dude, it was the first time I've encountered that, and I don't doubt that I'm better for it because they would not check out. So the guy that had me in a headlock was really there the whole time.
Oh shit.
And I would thank God every day because Alia and Anton. I would have a gun on them and be a skinhead, then afterward be the craft services doing the stupidest bits ever. And it kept me sane because I won't work well if I have to be a skinhead for a month.
Who would?
So I shot in Portland and I would go home and my parents live there. And it was the best. My parents literally like sang me a lullaby one night. They're like, it's so good to have you home. And I'm like, man, I can act like I don't like this. This is kind of great because I got to go back and be a skinhead tomorrow.
Let's put on an episode.
Yeah. No, it was great.
Take your shirt off.
It's really funny.
I've got your new Debbie Gibson.
Thanks, Mom.
When you say like the younger class was really method, that must have been an interesting contrast because you've got Patrick Stewart in this as well. And he, I would imagine, isn't quite that way.
No, he was just in between like totally cool. And they were wonderful, too,
after.
But I respect everyone's process. But for me, we come from Makes the Upsies, Second City, Los Angeles. So it's much better for me if I can be a skinhead. And then when they yell cut, if I can, be getting another Snickers bar at craft services and not have to keep that. And there's a couple people.
Yeah.
It's because I always play all these bad guys because of my size. And it's hilarious. And I've had a couple actors like, it'd be great for me if you could not be joking around if you kind of keep this character. But man, it might be great for you. It's not great for me.
Yeah, exactly. And
I'm
this
gonna
is
be
a
yucking
scene.
It up over
yeah.
here. Yeah.
Yeah.
This check is gonna clear, and I'm not gonna take this dark energy with it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
okay, let's wrap this up with a little bit of a roundtable discussion because the three of us have a bit of a history with Drunk History itself.
Yeah.
We've all three been narrators. We've probably been a reenactor in some form in it. So let's go around the table and say what we narrated first and whatever ones you did. We'll start with you, Steve.
Okay. The first one was – oh, okay. It was William Randolph Hearst and Orson Welles.
Oh,
it was
so
the
good.
Story of how Citizen Kane came to be, and I was so excited about those stories. It's one of my favorite, golden age of Hollywood stories.
Did you get to pick it, or did they assign you?
That one, I got, a choice, and they were doing, a Hollywood one. I'm like, oh, let me see what stories you guys have in mind for that. I was like, boom, that's the one. I remember it from, film school. So I was, so excited. I didn't have to study it, and so fired up to do that one. And that was my first one, because Derek had asked me to – do it a couple times. I'm like, Derek, I don't know. I'm an actor, man. I don't know if it's good for me to be seen drunk on TV. I'm like, well, you know. But.
Oh, I had that concern because I was a spokesperson for Volkswagen when I did my last one. And I'm like, wait, this guy doing car commercials is getting just shit-faced on TV, but no one had an issue.
People
no,
love it.
In fact, you'd probably get jobs from him. It's only helped, I'm sure. That was my first one and probably my favorite.
And then what else did you do?
I did one about the Roswell UFO crash.
Okay, yes, that's right.
I did one about, oh my God, I can't remember. It was about an island of prisoners. And then I did the one for this year, but I won't say what it is.
Okay, that's exciting. Eric?
Let's see. I've done Elvis.
Oh, Elvis, we were the same
Nixon.
Episode, the very
oh,
first
yeah.
episode
it
of the first season.
Allen, right?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I remember being so honored to be here with
same.
You guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so cool. So I did Elvis, And then I did Johnny Cash and Chris Christopherson, which is my favorite. I'm a big country guy.
That one was amazing. That's my favorite.
The helicopter.
I went up to Johnny Knoxville. It's one of those things where I'm like, well, he's there. I have to. I mean, it'll be awkward now for him if I don't go up.
Yeah.
Nicest guy ever. In about 5 minutes, he's like, I'm sorry, brother. Explain to me how I know you again.
Same thing to Nathan Fielder, who played Bob Woodward in my Watergate one, and he was like he was on the show. Very nice, but, oh, okay.
I think it's because for me, I'm so scared when I've reenacted, and I've watched it 100 times over and over again to make sure I don't screw up. And they've been smaller parts.
Yeah.
But I think because I'm so obsessive with it, that I'm like, I know the guys intimately. These guys can probably watch it 4 or 5 times. Like, yep, got it. Yep, got that guy down. And they're just moving on. But for me, I'm like, I so just don't want to screw this up.
Right. Yeah.
And then I did Rin Tin Tin and Churchill and FDR.
Oh, God.
And the Rin Tin Tin was great because it got my dogs in it. But the Christopherson, Johnny Cash one I loved a ton because when Merle and Chris played the Savant Theater, Merle's second to last show, I snuck backstage, as you do. And then I could have gone left for Merle or right for Chris, and I went right for Chris and was by there. And then I saw him, and then I talked to his wife, and they let me come in, and his grandkids had seen the Drunk History and loved it.
Oh, my God.
And that thrilled me to know, like, okay, Christopherson's grandkids have gone to school. And then, that was pretty great.
I so regret.
How many have you done now?
I've done 3. I did Watergate.
Yep. I love the Watergate one.
Did the Alamo, and I did Wernher von Braun, the rocket scientist.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So I got to choose Watergate. They assigned me Alamo and Wernher von Braun, which
– those are great assignments.
Yeah, I was happy to do it. And I didn't know anything about the Alamo, so I'm sort of obsessive too, where I like, I've got to get this. I didn't just like read up online. Yeah. I read some books and stuff like that.
For
and
sure.
Probably ended up giving them too much information. In fact, I even remember with the Wernher von Braun one, they had a – basically in that one, it was getting more streamlined, and the producer kind of had some stuff like an outline of the story already ready to go, and it didn't include certain things about like the concentration camps. And I'm like, I think we got to mention that he's not a white knight hero. Yeah. And so I remember drunkenly, because I was conscious of that when I was sober, but when I got drunk, really trying to like – clear that up, and I don't remember what the thing ended up being, but it got in there somehow.
Oh, man.
So do you guys get this question as much as I do? Like, are you really drunk? Were you really drunk? And I feel like it's entirely clear. Did you guys throw up at all?
No. Mm. I'm not.
I sure did.
Did you?
Oh, twice, yeah.
Well, I guess
I only did it twice because 2 stories were in one night.
No.
So I've vomited both times.
See, that's why you're amazing. I could never do 2 in 1.
No, God,
I am toddler level, embarrassing level drunk after like 3 quarters of the first one.
Me too.
Well, I don't know how I did either because I'll tell you what, I do not remember. Ironically, I do not remember the Alamo. I don't remember telling that story. I know I studied. I mean, I remember all of the prep, but I don't remember talking about it. I've seen myself. I'm holding my old family heirloom Western rifle. Oh. I don't remember them giving me that. I don't remember any of it.
It's
you might be
amazing.
The only person to ever do 2 in a night, 2 in a day. I've never heard of that.
I thought they were doing everybody 2 in a row.
Maybe Kirkman. I think God bless Steve. I don't think you and I are equipped for it.
No.
I think you and I burn brightly very quick and then need some downtime.
Yeah, I got about 2 hours. I'm like, let's do this. Start shooting.
I think an hour and a half.
What were your drinks of choice?
It's the same for me. It's always some kind of bourbon and some kind of craft IPA.
Yes.
Nice. The good stuff. Yeah.
Because they give you, at the time, I think it was like a $40 liquor allowance.
I don't think I've ever got that money back.
Really?
Have you ever? No, I probably have.
Come to think of it.
No, I haven't.
No.
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 You just bring it, and they're like, just give us the receipt. But I'm like, hammered.
Yeah.
I'm like, right.
I'm going to
write here, Viacom. Yeah, here we go.
It's going to be $180.
Yeah.
Because they tell you to have a couple of drinks or one or two before they even get there, so you're kind of getting in the pocket and a little tight. And then they do a breathalyzer test to see where you are. I remember my EMT took a breathalyzer test and went, whoa. Because I just had a swig of scotch. I drank scotch the first time. And boy.
That's very
good. Do you do the oxygen?
No, I have never. I didn't get
Canaan,
to do the oxygen.
Canaan got me hip to the oxygen. You'll get like high. It's wonderful.
Oh, wow.
They have somebody, the nurse that comes with Drunk History, because there's a nurse there that's in your house the whole time, and a producer fact checking you, which is weird because as you turn into the toddler, and you start producing and directing and editing on your own. Like when I did the one on Rin Tin Tin, I start talking about my dog for 20 minutes and how I found her in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm.
These dogs are incredible, by the way. Your wife has an Instagram where she grooms these dogs and blow dries them in slow motion. And
unreal.
Amanda and I sit at home.
No, they're the best.
Most nights.
I question social media a lot lately, but Jessarona grooming is one of the truly, it's pure light and love and joy.
That's exactly right.
Oh, yeah. And then I loved when our dogs got cameos.
I also love, if we're just doing that, cats of Instagram. That brings me a lot of happiness in these scary times.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just stare at it for 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you on that. Yeah. That's for sure.
Well, you have a very special cat, too, Steve.
I do, yeah. I do. God, I love her. I just hope every morning I look at my cat and I think, I hope I go before she leaves.
I have the same issue.
I will not be able to take it.
I don't know what to do.
I'll probably kill myself.
I know.
Honestly.
Amanda and I talk about it the whole time. You should not outlive your children.
No. I think the same thing. And she is my kid.
Oh, I cannot imagine.
Just about 9. She's got time. I think she's midlife.
Yeah, definitely.
She's not retired yet.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Active cat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Same with us. We got a real rabble rouser over at the
Gorley. That's good, though. It's good for him.
Yeah.
Keep the heartbreak going.
Yeah. So how many times did you guys have to tell your story? Do you remember?
A few, right?
Yeah.
But it also gets so hazy. And I always say the wives and husbands and girlfriends and boyfriends are the true hero.
Oh, that is no joke.
Because they have a TV crew come into their house, transport.
Full crew, yeah.
Their spouse into a semi-ambulatory toddler that they have to then put to bed and are saying the dumbest things ever, combining history with I love you and I'm hungry. And then like, dude, the worst.
You know, because when I threw up, they did this kind of like cursory job of cleaning it up with our like bath towels. But when Amanda came home, she had to like finish cleaning it up.
Yeah.
And the last time I did it, Derek Waters was passed out in our bed. I was still telling the story to the producer, and he was passed.
Was he
already drunk?
Was he really?
And so Amanda's coming home, and like Derek Waters is in our bed, and
Waters is a heroic effort for him right now.
It is
for us. Oh, yeah, it's like no college kidding. Level drunk that I can do once a year. But he's rolling in the deep.
Well, he's a professional.
He is.
The thing is, though, you need him to drink with you because otherwise, I feel like you'd feel exploited.
I agree.
If you were drinking by yourself and just cameras are on you and there's a producer asking you, I mean, I'd be like,
Yeah.
Why are you just making fun of me? You know, but when you have someone to – because we all know Derek and like you feel like you're just drinking with a buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Drinking
that's,
hard.
Yeah. That's the blessing and the curse.
Yeah. Yep. I'm still hungover from six months ago.
Guys, I wish every episode was like this. I had a blast. Man. It was really fun.
Thank you
very much.
It's such an honor to be here, buddy.
Yeah, where can people find you and what are you up to now?
You know, I'm
Steve. What's your show? We're excited about it, man.
Show
this is no small
comedy
thing.
Get Down on BET coming out October 12th.
Very nice.
And I auditioned for it. This ass beat me out.
Hey,
which is how
you
we became
beat me up
friends.
For a lot of things.
Hey,
that
it's
is
about
true.
It's about
that
50.
Is true.
But
that
what
is
I love is we met in audition rooms going for big guy parts, and we're the best of friends.
Yeah,
and it's genuine. Wonderful. And he beat me out for this, and it is. So tailor-made for Steve.
Yeah.
It is funny. It's you rolling around with Charlie Murphy and Eddie Griffin. And like
Lopez. It's a weird situation. But
and it's you're the white guy on there.
I'm the white
and
guy.
And it is tailor-made for you,
thank
man.
You.
I cannot wait to see it.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be funny, I thought.
When does it come out?
October 12th.
Oh, coming up?
Yep.
Okay. And Eric, you got anything in the pipeline?
I got indie movies. I got one called Dying 101. I'm finishing now, which is crazy because – Brian Dennehy plays my dad, and Tom Arnold plays my brother, and Larry Clark,
former guest of the show, Tom Arnold.
Oh, isn't he great?
Yeah, yeah.
That is
I
great
wanna
casting
ask him,
right there.
Yeah, I want to ask him about some of these tapes he's allegedly heard. I won't get political, but I'm waiting to get close to him, because remember he said he had the tape of Trump saying the N-word on The Apprentice?
That's right.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Tom Arnold has that?
Yes.
Why would
yeah.
Tom Arnold have that?
Tom Arnold is...
Connected?
As connected as just about anyone you'd know.
He got the tape from NBC?
He's heard it, and supposedly he said that an audio guy would be fired and they'd all – where I'm like, but Mark Cuban offered to pay the fine. But supposedly it was an NDA, and Mark Burnett, the EP of that show, fought to make sure it wasn't released.
Yeah, I heard that.
So I'm trying to get – I have one day left with him on Monday, and I'm trying to just say – dude, sneak it to me.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Yeah.
They can come for me. They're going to get a bunch of dog stuff. I rent.
Sadly,
let's go. Come on.
They can find that tape and it wouldn't matter.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's the sad thing.
No.
That makes me sad.
Well.
Yeah. So I have a movie called Family with Juggalos. I can't wait for people to see. God. Yeah, it'll be a fun one.
Insane clown.
The literal ICP is in it and Juggalos. Yeah, I play – Allison Tolman and I have a daughter. We leave town and my sister, who's played by Taylor Schilling, starts taking care of her. They have a cool relationship and then – she runs off to the Gathering of the Juggalos, and we all have to get her back with Brian Tyree Henry, who's amazing. So with that, and then I have another one called Family, where I play a sheriff making some real poor decisions, you know, back to playing some of the bad guys.
On brand.
Yeah, on brand.
thank you guys so much.
We love you, man.
Thank you, man. This is so fun, buddy.
All right.
Earwolf? More like Fear Wolf. Get ready to quake in your headphones because Earwolf's movie podcast are talking about horror movies the entire month of October. Listen to How Did This Get Made? The Canon and Cracked Movie Club dissect spine-tingling horror classics all month long. And watch out for special spooktacular episodes of Gilbert Gottfried's amazing colossal podcast, The Cracked Podcast. And who charted? Or should I say, Boo Charted? Subscribe to all these shows and follow along on social media with the hashtag FearWolf. And beware of podcasts that go bump in the night!
This has been an Earwolf production. Executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.